welcome to part two of Albert Square After Dark Talks to Chris Crenshaw. I'm Ree, and this is Rob. Hello, Rob.
Hello. I mean, I cannot believe how generous Chris was with his time, by the way. The fact that we managed to get two whole episodes out of him, and this one is even more exciting than the first.
Isn't it just in this second episode, Chris talks to us about his biggest storylines, the six, the anniversary, flashback episodes, and the thinking behind over 40 character returns for the anniversary year. Enjoy.
So, the big mystery, the big, like you said a few times, the big epic storyline that you wanted to tell, the six. Now, tell us about the six, Chris. How did that happen? Tell us all about how you build a mystery up. How did you choose the women? Go, tell us everything.
When I took over, I was looking for that big blockbuster, high concept storyline, something that was gonna get people talking about EastEnders again. I was really keen that it would also appeal to a social media audience. I wanted chatter, we wanted buzz, we wanted noise, we wanted people to come together, and to form their own like communities and groups, and whether that's in real life, but probably more common now online. And whodunits were being pitched when I was asking for this. But I was very, very, very aware that the last big successful whodunit was Who Killed Lucy, and it was, in my opinion, it was brilliant. I thought it was brilliantly told, and therefore, I felt that it was hard to compete with that or to just play another one. And if you're going to do something similar, you need to do something different. That was always, you need to do it in a different way. I always feel like you need to do it in a different way. You need to give the audience something more. You need to keep innovating. So I tasked the team, the writers, the story team, the editorial team, on finding a different way through it, a new mechanic perhaps. Something different at its core, something that we've not necessarily seen before on EastEnders. And one of the writers pitched a flash forward, and it wasn't the six, and it was nothing like what we got, really. Well, no, there were some couple of elements. It was Sharon in a wedding dress with blood beside her, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, something like that. And there was like a calendar on the wall, and it was like next year's day or a future day or a date in the future. And it wasn't a fully formed pitch or a fully formed idea, but it was something. And I therefore set off a working group, like a kind of subgroup with some of the story team, a couple of the writers, to go away and kind of build it up more, kind of explore it further in a more cohesive way, and kind of come up with something more robust, I suppose. And it came back with six women stood over dead man's body. So it was a whodunit, and it was a who is it? And I loved that concept. And that's when I thought, oh, I feel like we're onto something here, and I feel like we've cracked it. And it wasn't just, so the flash forward element had already been pitched. So it wasn't just that. I think I've said this before, like the flash forward and that episode in February that was on the anniversary, like not a big anniversary, what was it, the 38th anniversary, I think it was. Must have been, yeah. And it was all set in a Vic, and then we cut at the end, as I'm sure you remember. But that decision to play a flash forward and flash forward to 10 months in advance, that wasn't something that I took lightly. I remember being concerned that while the other soaps had used other techniques and other soaps had used flash forward, we hadn't. And whether a And I don't say this in a bad way. I'm quite fond of it. Whether the gimmick like this was EastEnders, was it us? And I always used to try, and I mentioned the DNA, and I mentioned Julie and Tony earlier. I used to try and put myself in their shoes and ask, what would they think to this idea? And some might say, oh, they would have absolutely hated that idea. But I also needed to keep a kind of 2020, not five, it was 2022 at the time, hat on and keep moving forward, keep innovating, and keep up with the audience's expectations. And soap has evolved. It's no not while you try to remain true to the DNA, it's no longer kitchen sink in the same way. But it was putting six women that I think we pretty much had one woman from each family, each of the clans in there. We didn't have a Mitchell, but that was because the Mitchells were involved in Lola's storyline. That storyline was playing alongside it, and I knew that that would be a tonal clash. I know a lot of people have wondered why Kat wasn't part of it, and obviously Stacey represented the Slaters, but most importantly, we knew that at the time of the flash forward, Alfie, in a few months' time, I think it was summer, was going to be diagnosed with prostate cancer. And again, there was a tonal clash of genres. Like it never felt right, but then Alfie was going to potentially be a suspect of a man that could be the body on the floor. So it was about kind of some of the decisions about like why those women, like we did consider and a lot of characters. And but I knew that the power of the story, not only was it going to create a lot of speculation and have people guessing throughout the year and kind of theorizing, but it was rooted in these six iconic female characters who the viewers all adore. Have I answered your question?
I mean, so you picked the six women because of the fact that they were really popular with the audience at the time. Great moment for Suki to be able to come forward and step forward in with amongst those sort of legends of the square as well.
Yeah, and Nish was already in play, wasn't he? He must have been
Yes,
enjoying.
he was, yeah.
Yeah, and he was the ultimate villain. So it was story generated as well. Like we knew we had this villain in with this Sookie and Nish toxic storyline, with beautiful love story between Sookie and Eve, and then and Nish kind of he was going to find out all of that. So there was a very it was a very clear direction on the shape of that story, which felt like it was going to organically fit into the concept of the six, because we also knew that we were playing a whodunit, and we were playing a who is it, and therefore we wanted to kind of set up all of these different people as suspects, and therefore that was a very kind of clear one. Did you ask about how it was all mapped out across the
Yeah, like, so how do you construct the mystery of it? Because obviously, EastEnders whodunits are quite famous for the fact that they're quite layered, the EastEnders whodunits, and this was no different in terms of the mysteries and sort of the clues that were scattered a lot around as well. Like, viewers were grasping at everything they could find to sort of try and work out the answers. I remember when Ravi kidnapped Eve. Tell me whether this was true or not. There was the word six was carved into a tree, and we were absolutely. Was that deliberate? Were you just throwing in red herrings at that point? Wow. Just to mess with us
We fell
for
for
no
that one, didn't
reason.
we?
Oh, we were
We were like,
obsessed.
Eve's it's the seven with Eve, that's it.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's what we were hoping. We wanted people to just kind of lose themselves in the story, go along for the ride. It wasn't a story that we wanted to take too seriously. Like, obviously we cared about it. Absolutely cared about it, and but we wanted people to enjoy it. Like it was a complete contrast to, say, the Lola story, if that's a
Yeah, of course.
comparison. And that's the beauty of what we're able to do. So yeah, it was. We wanted people to play along and guess, and they did, and they were. Yeah, I saw a lot of people picking up on so many different things, and I think it was always going to be Keanu that was killed.
So when Keanu was brought back and you knew that Keanu was bringing back,
You
you
know what?
knew.
No. And I kind of wish I did at that point, because then, yeah, I mean, then Danny would have known earlier, but not when he was brought back months later, but not that many months later. It was always going to be Linda. It was always going to be Linda that did it. And she was always going to be doing it to save her best friend Sharon. And it was always going to be Sharon and Keanu's wedding. That was kind of always there. That's when we knew that that's what we were aiming for those arcs throughout the year. We also knew that Nish would meet his demise. And Naveen knew that. Naveen knew that when he took the role, we had conversations beforehand where I made it very clear that there was a clear arc, and it wasn't definitely going to end in him dying, but it was quite likely, very likely. But he wasn't ever going to, there wasn't going to be a redemption arc. He wasn't going to be, in 2 years' time, you're going to see him shopping in the Minute Mart, or buying a coffee from Stacy. Like, it just, he was a villain that was, there was a period of time. And he was, yeah, he was that ultimate villain. And so he was the most obvious, I think, in terms of the six. And the writers and I had several conversations. I remember where we debated whether it should be Nish on the floor. And obviously it was Nish on the floor. But I always felt that it was too obvious. And I think after the flash forward episode went out and it got the reaction that we'd hoped for, and not just that night, but as we were kind of going through those weeks and those months, and because even though we have that plan and what's in sight, and we knew it was going to be Keanu. So therefore, look, well, I suppose my point is, Keanu was on the floor. It was going to be Keanu on the floor, and Linda had done it. But as and but where months before storyline in those episodes, so things can change, and you want to be able to have that flexibility. But because we realised that people were getting, deliciously hungry with this story and wanted more, and they were fascinated by it.
Obsessed.
And it was going to be Christmas Day, and EastEnders at Christmas is just so special, isn't it? Like, it just really is. I love it. I've always loved it in my house. It's like everyone's like sits around. It's the only time on Christmas Day where you sit together as a family and everyone has to be quiet and you've watched. Anyway, but I realized as the through the success of the story, as we were kind of in those interim months, that we couldn't deliver what they expected, which would have been niche, so therefore we needed a twist. We needed something different to kind of give the viewers something more, which is why we then, and I remember at one point somebody pitched that it was Phil on the floor, but then he wasn't dead. And I just remember thinking, I'm never going to really believe that we're. I know that actually you could, like, he was one of the men. He was in that lineup and you could believe it. I don't know if I really believed it. And I didn't feel that we'd had the build with him that it was going to be believable. Hey, I think you were going to know that he was then going to. Because I think what the aim was with Nish was that you were still supposed to think that he could be dead. And I think we came out of Christmas and it was like, are there two dead bodies?
I thought that. I got so
Exactly. Yeah.
confused, didn't I,
That
on
was,
Christmas Day.
yeah. Whereas I think if it was, I think if it was Bill, you would have kind of gone, no. I think we know that it's going to. But yeah, and you know what? Like, just in terms of like clues and things, I think perhaps one of the biggest clues that I don't believe many people picked up on in the flash forward episode in February, that I think a lot of people did then pick up on Christmas Day when they discovered that it was Keanu who was the body, was in that flash forward episode, we open outside exterior of the Vic. A supporting artist walks through the puddle and enters the Vic, but then we open with Linda and
I
she
know what you're
rings
going to
the
say.
bell. And then she goes around the bar and she touches Keanu on the back shoulder. And it was, and it, and he was the first one that she interacted with. And that was purposely done. A lot of people don't know that was purposely done. So even the writer at the time didn't know why I was asking for that. So it was, yeah. And when we shot that, so Danny and Kelly didn't know at the time. So they didn't know why they were being asked that, but that, and I was worried. I was like, people are going to clock this, aren't they? It's like the giveaway. But I think it works. I think
I
it
think
works.
it did because actually,
Yeah.
what we didn't know about that episode, because it was one of the episodes that went out live. I don't think there was an early upload on that
No, we
flash forward
kept, yeah, we
episode.
did. We held it back with a nice
So
trailer,
we,
and then we held it back.
yeah, so we didn't actually know what was going to happen in that episode. So I think the touch went by completely over our heads, and then obviously I think Dean's picture was in that episode as well. So we got distracted by other things.
Yeah, we seeded Dean so that we knew that he was kind of on the horizon. And I think then because it was such a kind of gear change and a huge moment of that episode, like flash forward, and it was Christmas, and I thought there was something great. I loved it being Christmas, because not just because it was Christmas, but even in that episode, because in February you've just got rid of Christmas. Like, it's not. You took your own decorations down, and then all of a sudden you're seeing decorations in the Vic, and you panned along and you saw the the buffet table, and you're clearly at a wedding, and then you see the women, and it was, beautifully done from every single department, including the director. But yeah, because of that scene, I think everybody then just were analyzing that moment, not necessarily everything that came before it in the episode. Yeah. So there were other there, because I think, am I right in saying that all of the suspect men were in that episode? I'm gonna get that wrong, aren't I? Brad was in it. Brad was in it very briefly. Nish was in it. Was Rocky in it?
I don't, I
No,
can't remember,
I
actually. I
think there
can't
was something
remember.
like, I can't remember, but yeah, it was setting up, like, even from that moment, who this possibly could be. And obviously you had the six women coming together for their locking and their kind of cheers
It
moment before
was
the cut.
so much fun. I think that's the whole thing. The whole journey was so much fun. Like, we were so ready. I remember, like, the build up to Christmas Day. I was a nervous wreck. I could not wait for the episode for when it was actually revealed. But in terms of, like, so it's a so such a risky idea, though, producing in terms of logistically, to say, right, we're going to film something now, and then we're going to give the audience answers. You all need to still be here in sort of 9 months' time, And what did you have a backup plan? Like, worst case scenario, Kelly Bright, who's quite important to the story, falls over a cat or something and breaks her ankle and has to be off work for 6 months. Like, what did you do? Was there a backup plan, or was it just sort of praying that that doesn't happen?
Yeah, there was a lot of sleepless nights and lots of praying, and there, so yeah, it is a huge risk when you do something like that so far into the future, and therefore you have to kind of try to make the right decisions at the right time, and I kind of, and I know that the six have spoken about this before, but I kind of gathered them. How they became known as the six was because I thought, well, how am I going to break this news to them? Do I do it individually? No. Let me just bring them all together. And I remember them, like, waiting outside my office, and they were really kind of like, what is this about to, what are we about to be told? Because it was a strange group of characters. Like, it wasn't a family group. Like, you might sometimes bring in a family, or not often, but or characters that worked really closely with each other. And obviously Kelly and Tish worked closely together because Sharon and Linda are best friends. But some of them, they weren't. So they were very like, what is this about? And I think I did I read the scene out? I think I read the scene out, and I was like, we and then we cut, and yeah, I think I've read that final scene out. I explained the episode, I read the final scene, and I explained that we cut, and then it was Christmas. And now, where this was before Christmas 2022, this was like towards the end of 2022. We started shooting it in January, so it was the back end of 2022. And I said, and then we cut to Christmas 2023, and they were like, and I remember that was it, because it was over lunch. It was over their lunch period. So they were all eating, and we were on the sofas. They were eating their lunch. And then I said this, and it was
you
like, they all just stopped eating. They all just like fell silent, the women. And we're like, and that were just absorbing what I was saying. And I remember thinking, that's a great reaction, because if that's their reaction, then we're at that. We're in a good place already. And actually, what was great was when we started shooting it in the January, the crew were kind of guessing, and they were excited by it. And I'm like, oh, you're getting like positive vibes. And I think that's always like a nice sign. It's a nice feeling to kind of go, well, we're all viewers at the end of the day. We're all kind of consuming this. Everyone's got, it's a subjective business that we're in, but everyone's got a take, an experience. So, but in terms of contingency, and in terms of like the worst case scenario, yeah, we had things in place, but and we but we would have had to change things considerably. I don't know if there was ever a world in which, if something catastrophic had happened, to use your example, like one of the women had, injured themselves. I don't know. There may have been a way of making it work, or we would have had to kind of own it, and like, and hope the audience forgive you, which is never not what you want to do, because you've set it up with such a So you've put, and I do remember. I remember at what we had this big meeting. I can't remember. I think this was before I briefed the six. Oh, sorry, and that's why. Sorry, I didn't mention why they were called the six. And I said, and my assistant said, "What do you want the meeting to be called?" And I was like, "The six." And then I told them that, and then they had a WhatsApp group called the six, and they became
Amazing.
the six, and the storylines become known as the six, which is incredible, really. I'd had a meeting with a few of my HODs when I was briefing them, and we were talking about the Vic and how the Vic would look and where in the Vic and what, and the kind of idea for the show. I made it very clear that this was our big, big, big blockbuster, and I do remember, like, as we spoke through it and we were thinking about all of the potential eventualities of what could go wrong. I remember, like, looking to Sharon, my series producer, and I think Kiri, my story producer, and I think Katie, the head of social media, and going, "Are we making the silliest decision here? Am I making a mistake? Like, is this all, could this all backfire? Because it could go devastatingly wrong if something happens." And they all were, "No, don't get nervous, Chris. Don't get cold feet. Like, it's a brilliant idea. It's a brilliant concept. It will be okay." And I was like, "Yeah, let's go for it." And so I mean, the not huge contingencies, some, and I won't go into all of the details of what that looks like, but a lot of it was a risk. It really, really, really was a
Yeah,
risk.
it was, but
Unfortunately, it was I think it paid off, and we didn't end up getting, we didn't get into huge difficulty. Things did change, things often change, and everything didn't go in, like, according to plan, but that does happen with storylining and things going a different direction for a number of reasons.
during your time on EastEnders, you had over 40 characters return in some
That
capacity,
I
which is,
added that up. I didn't know that. That's incredible. So,
yeah,
like,
quite
not
outstanding.
incredible that they're sorted, they're incredible that that statistic. Wow.
We're geeks, Chris. This is what we do all day. It's, you the difference is you get paid for it. We don't.
So, out of those returning characters, did you have a favourite? And was there anybody that you approached who had to say no because they had plans or something?
Oh, a favorite. Oh, that's really, really difficult. You know what? I think David Wicks is one of my all-time favorite
Great
characters.
character. Great character.
Michael French is a phenomenal actor, and I just remember, like, David and Bianca, and you can remember that storyline when, Bianca didn't know that he was her father, and I just remember it clearly, and they're in the Carlo, and she was like, and he had to, like, say, "I'm your father," and phenomenal. And David and Cindy, like, I absolutely love that era of EastEnders as well. I mean, it's unfair. I don't like to have favorites because they all feel like I feel a bit unfair. And but I know, but I do remember when I pitched the story to Michael, and when he was on board with his kind of, weak return. I remember my story producer, I remember calling him up and saying, "Yeah, he's agreed, we've locked it or something." And he's saying, "I'm really pleased for you because I know that he is one of your kind of favorite legacy characters. I feel really bad by not kind of saying others because and yeah, but yeah, maybe that was. I'd love to have done more with David, I think. It's probably not fair for me to say too much about anyone that kind of said no. I think, because there's always
Fair
different
enough.
circumstances as to why someone can't necessarily do it. But Jake, I don't think he'd mind me saying this, but Jake Wood and I spoke, a few times over the years. Sadly, the timing never worked. But I'm so pleased to see that he's back. We were messaging the other day, and he's loving it, and it's great to see Max back. But I think I was keen that in our 40th year, and that celebratory year, that huge milestone, that as I kind of said before, that we lent on the past, and I think I said this before, I think we had a big return almost, I think, from every month from September through to the anniversary, whether it was Chrissy or whether it was David or whether it was Nigel or Ruby. But they all did have to play into the bigger narrative, into one of the existing storylines. It couldn't just be for the sake of it. And that's why the other, there was obviously lovely little, as I mentioned earlier, lovely little cameos from from Joe Swash and, Gary and Minty. But Angie was the cherry. She was the
Yeah, of
like the cherry
course.
on the top. And I really hope Anita doesn't mind me sharing this, but she didn't say yes straight away. She didn't say no, but she wanted to ensure that it was the right decision and that it was going to work and that we were going to be able to pull it off successfully. And I respected that because, her legacy and it means everything. And you don't want to kind of ruin that. And I don't want to ruin it. I don't want the audience to be left with something else. I want them to be left wanting more, not less. And the same with Grant, like Ross Kemp and I were discussing his return for about 3 years, and
Wow.
these are iconic characters, and no one wants to no one wants to mess that up.
I mean, when Angie stepped onto screen, I don't mind telling you, Krista cried. I absolutely sobbed. It was amazing because you knew how important that moment was. It was because we knew it was the 40s, so everything had an atmosphere about it anyway. And then for Angie just to kind of step forward, it was just like perfect. Yeah, that's an amazing, amazing moment. Yeah, it was
And the
great.
best thing was that it wasn't spoiled or leaked as well. So it was such a surprise for audiences. I remember us messaging Robert being like, what? No way.
Just like. Yeah, I remember being at work in work at 5 a.m. the next day, and then I crossed with one of the scenic hands who kind of moves the sets around, and I used to always see him like at the crack of dawn. We were the two there at 5 a.m. every day, and he was like, "How did you do? How did you pull? How did I not know?" And I was like, "No." And like Kelly Bryant was messaging me like, "She didn't know." No. We try. Yeah, at one point there was like two of us that knew, and obviously then that grows a little bit and a little bit. But I'd probably say definitely no more than like 10 people knew, even like shooting that scene, because it was a closed set and nobody knew. There was something going on, but no one knew what. So and it was important. It was important that we were able to keep that a secret, because that for that moment you may not have cried. You may not have cried if you knew it was coming.
No, I don't think I would have done. No, it was the shock of it as well, but also just the pure emotion of it. And I'm assuming, Letitia Dean must have been so delighted to be able to work with her once more again as well. Like it was, yeah, it felt big.
Obviously, she was insane. It was beautiful to reunite them. It
If
was.
you hadn't told her, and then Angie just steps forward, don't say anything, just react, it'll be fine.
We worked really closely to get the scene right, and Anita had thoughts, and obviously we spoke a lot about her costume, and we went back and forth for some time. It wasn't yeah like with all of those returns, I think with Ross, with Tracy Ann Oberman, with there's it's not like you just pick up the phone and go, "Do you want to come back?" And they all go, "Yeah," because they care. They care about their characters as much as the viewers do, and they want to kind of make sure that it's the right call and that we're doing the right thing by them, by the viewers, by the fan, by their character.
Just before we get to the 40th, which I imagine was probably one of the scariest moments of your career, trying to find put all that together, I just want to briefly touch on Phil, because Phil actually was felt like Phil went through quite the transformation through your era. Was that a deliberate thing? Was Phil a character that you wanted to do a lot of work on? Because it felt like Phil really went on a journey throughout your time on the show.
How can you not want to do something quite, special with Steve? He's an absolute genius.
He
He's
really is.
a master at his craft, and he's created such a iconic character. And iconic does get bandied around very loosely, I think, these days, but he is an icon. I think everybody in the UK knows the name and the face Phil Mitchell, and that's not easily done. And I wanted to put Phil at the center of the 40th, and I was keen to find a story for Phil that was different for him. I was less keen on like the gangster stuff. I think not just for Phil, I'm talking like kind of in general. And it's I always find it an odd thing to say, because like when I used to love the gangster stuff in the 90s with Bill Grant and Johnny Allen. Oh my gosh, couldn't get enough of it. But I also think that we've moved on as a society, and crime's moved on, and it doesn't operate in the same way. In the 90s, protection racket still happened, and there was still a lot of kind of criminal activity happening in clubs and in bars and in the East End. And And yeah, that stuff to some degree might still happen, but a lot of it's done like online and digitally. And that's not very dramatic. And I had this like thing about guns. Like I wasn't ever a huge fan of guns, or guns being so accessible in our world. And I'm not to say, like, I know Phil has a gun. Phil has a gun. Of course he has a gun. We've seen him have a gun. That's not unbelievable.
And a big bat.
But I do think it could be unbelievable with, Dot turns up with a gun one day. It just doesn't, you have to be real. I think I only used a gun 3 times. I used a gun with Sam, and that was Sam Mitchell, and she'd abducted Aiden. Do you remember that?
Yes,
And that was very, really early on. That was like August 22, and so it's like my second month. And then I used a gun or guns, I think, for the heavies that helped Nish escape from prison. Not prison, sorry, ambulance that was taking him from the
from the
hospital,
van,
from the van. And that was hard because I was a bit like, prison escapes don't happen. Like, no, we can't do this. We're not doing this. This is in the lead up. And then there was a real life case of a prisoner
Oh, wow.
escaping in from like Wandsworth Prison or somewhere. I can't remember. And he was on the run for a few days. You'll probably remember it a couple of years ago. And straight as I saw that happen, I was like, oh, okay, all right. So there is a there is, and it a different kind of escape, but it did allow me to say yes to that beat of the story. So then there was guns there, and then there was the gun. Obviously, Phil was going to use and did use, but obviously Cindy managed to take from the safe and shot Ian, which led to everything at the 40th, which led to being pushed out of the way and then the Vic going up. But I think, like, if we're talking about Phil, like, I think the Mitchells are, again, I'm using the word iconic, but you can't say they're not, I don't think.
No,
You
it's
can't.
true.
And one of the most iconic families in soap. And, all of them, Peggy, Phil, Grant, Ronnie, Roxy, Sam, Archie, like, they're all incredibly rounded, brilliant characters. And I think, so quite early on, do you remember we played the original flashback? So not the one just before the 40th. I'm talking about the 1979 one.
I love that episode so much. It was incredible.
Thank you.
Like, it was amazing. It's just such an original idea, and it was just so mad to see an episode written by Simon Ashdown in 2022, three, whenever it was, with the likes of Ronnie, Archie, Peggy, all on screen together again. It was amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember how that came about, and it was at a conference, and a writer had pitched a short scene to discover that Phil or Eric had killed Keeble's dad. It was just like a quick flashback scene. And I kind of took that and turned it into something much more. I basically said, let's make an entire episode. Like, let's go for it. And that was, he's talking about Risk with the Six. I honestly felt like that was maybe one of the biggest risks I took at the beginning, early risks. And maybe not in the same way, but I was really confident that every department would rise to the challenge of executing that episode. I knew that our design department were going to create this fabulous set of 1979 East London working class, and people were like, "Oh, that wasn't the sorry, bad imitation." That a lot of people said, "Oh, but their furniture and that didn't look like it was from 1979. It looked like it was from the 60s." And I was like, "Yeah, they don't have money. They're not upgrading." It was. I had a conscious decision that their furniture shouldn't look like it's come from the 70s because they bought it 10, 20 years ago, which anyway, I kind of digress. But I knew costume were going to create these brilliant costumes. I knew that, hair and makeup were going to create brilliant stuff. I had absolute faith in every department, and this is going to sound awful, but I was very nervous about the casting process. And I spoke to my casting director about that, but I knew I just didn't know if they were going to be out there, like a young Phil, a young Grant.
Oh.
I knew that I needed Jamie Winston. I knew that I needed her. So I thought she was the only person that could play Peggy. And I don't know if you remember, she played Babs in
Yes.
the Barbara Windsor biopic, which was written by Tony Jordan. And I just knew it had to be her. And I do remember saying at the time and thinking that, and even though we were like in production, in script development. But I remember thinking, if we don't get her, like, we might have to rethink this episode because I don't know who else is gonna play it. And again, like Jamie, it was a big decision for her, and we had several meetings, and And yeah, and then she was on board. But I was probably most nervous about finding someone that could play young Phil because I thought it was going to be impossible. Steve has created such a, intriguing, delicate, nuanced character that, and he's got such a way with his performance that I just was thinking, I don't know how anybody else is going to pull this off and can play a young Phil. And yeah, I was worried, and there were sleepless nights, and a huge, 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 huge kudos to my casting director, Kevin. And as soon as he sent me the tape of Daniel, and I'd seen other tapes, and I was stunned. I was literally taken aback, and I was like, wow. And Teddy J as well was absolutely brilliant as Grant. And I think kind of leaping forward to the next flash forward, which kind of flashback, sorry, that took us into the 40th week, which was, it was different. There was a very different story at its core. The first flash, but first, let me get me flashes wrong. It's been so
We're
many.
all over the place. It's like you're like the TARDIS.
The first flashback, it was rooted in the Keeble storyline. Although I very much saw it as a social commentary and, the winter of discontent. And, I think we were on the cusp of quite a bleak winter in the UK in 2022, and what was the challenges that were amongst us. So I loved that element of the story. But with James Payne's episode, the episode before the 40th, it was the hyper-masculinity storyline, a core. That was the focus. And I don't know, I remember someone saying, oh, it's a really good kind of bookend. And I remember Steve saying to me, oh, it's quite a risk going into the 40th doing something that was off form, off format. And but it was a character piece. That was what we were always looking for with Phil. And you can take characters anywhere, like and you've got to earn it, and the pacing's got to be right, and you've got to kind of, it's all got to be motivated. But what I'm kind of most proud of with the Phil storyline is, even now, like, I love where they're going with the Nigel storyline. I'm so That's probably the storyline that I'm most gutted to kind of not see through, because I brought them back. We had big discussions. I knew it was going. I knew I was never going to see the end. But sorry, to track back to Phil, he's not become a different character. I think that's really key. So while he's not at the moment kind of going around with the baseball bat, he could, and he would, and he will. He's not lost his edge. He hasn't become a different man. He's just gone on an incredibly difficult personal journey. I hope, and like maybe, and this is my opinion, but I believe it worked, and it feels believable, and it felt rooted in the past, and it felt rooted in Eric and the backstory and everything that he'd experienced over the years with Peggy, and even with Grant, and how he saw himself. And it was seeded really early in terms of, it started as a loneliness storyline. It started when, and he was losing his position in the family when the new Mitchells came in, and he'd lost Kat and the kids. That's where it really started. He lost Kat and the kids, and then he had, we had that small period where Denise was living with him and with Raymond, and then he lost them, and he was struggling to find himself. And it was a loneliness story that became a depression story that became a psychosis story. But the root, the heart of it was also about masculinity and finding his self in the world today. And I think we were able to kind of highlight that in the mental health unit episode, the episode where he comes face to face with Gaz, played by Keith Allen, who was brilliant. And we kind of touched on those themes of what men like them have been brought up to be like, and what their place in the world is in today's world. So, and yes, Steve smashed it.
He
And
really did.
yeah, and I'm so chuffed that he won that award at the NTAs. I sent him a message, and he sent me a wonderful message. But how he's not won that award before is, the NTAs have been going 30 years, and
Right.
bad film 35 years, and I yeah, I'm very proud that it was, from that story played a part in that.
They
I again,
should
I don't know what your question was. I don't know if I answered it.
It's okay. You've answered it perfectly. Yeah,
Sorry. You have.
you've answered it perfectly. I think Phil hasn't transformed as a character, but he definitely evolved because of that story. And I think even now, when we're looking at him with Nigel and now Julie, I think you can see the after effects of that story
Should do,
because of
and I
where he
think
is now.
everything that he went through, and what he and that place where he went to, and that lowest ebb, those dark days, and that moment with Linda, especially, and that should, I hope, and I'm really, I have a lot of faith in Ben that he will continue this, and the team, that it will all influence him, and that's the thing. Like, I was always, if you take Linda's character, she's every direction or any storyline you play with her, what happened to her back in 2014, 13, with influences her all these years later. And I hope the same will be said for Phil. So, but at the same time, he could still pick up that baseball bat. He, we haven't completely, changed, I think, like, evaporated the original character, because he's a brilliant character.
So, the 40th. Like I said, probably the scariest moments of your career.
I think as the live episode went out, I don't think I breathed for half an hour. I honestly held my breath as we went live, and then let it out afterwards. And it was a very emotional. It was a really emotional moment. I'm not that emotional, I think. Or maybe I am. But I was, and it was pure relief. Sorry, I interrupted your question. Sorry.
That's okay. All I wanted to know really was how. So, talk again, like you did with the six, like talk to us how that came to be, the blowing up of the Vic, how did you settle on that? And killing Martin Fowler, that's a bold decision. So how did that all come to be as well?
Well, I think I mentioned earlier that EastEnders has, it's got a brilliant reputation that to pull off these milestone anniversaries. The 25th was brilliant. It was live, and Bradley fell off that roof, and it was a spectacle. And fast forward 5 years, the 30th anniversary was, just as explosive, and it was the reveal of who killed Lucy, and it was live, and it was there was so many kind of beautiful character performances with Laurie and Adam and Mimi and Ben, and I was very aware of what we're expecting, what we, and I say we as the audience, what the audience's expectations are, and I think, soap EastEnders is at its best when you've got, and it's kind of going back to like a Lola storyline or the Six storyline, blockbuster, cut against, or, in the other side of the forest, something incredibly rooted in realism, and something that's going to people can relate to, or an issue-led storyline like the George storyline. But I don't think when it comes to anniversaries, you want to kind of. I think you want spectacle. I think you want shock. I think you want to be surprised. I think you want more of a six. I suppose my point is, I think you want more of a six-like story than you do a Lola type of storyline
Sure.
in the build to it
Definitely.
and the moment itself. Yeah, you definitely are great. I'm pleased to hear that.
100%, yeah.
And so that's what we were looking for. And, we talked about the tube coming off the tracks and things like that.
I've
Like,
so wanted that for years, can I just say?
I mean, it would be brilliant. It would be brilliant. We couldn't make it work, for various reasons. And it just, and also it's really,
One
actually,
day.
it was like, oh, I don't know, it was various reasons. I love the Vic. The Vic is the heart of the show. And I know that when it was kind of, announced or people got wind of it, there was a little bit of like, oh, we've seen Vic fires before. We've seen a lot of Vic fires. And I knew that this would be different. I knew that it wasn't a fire. It was an explosion, and then what it was going to lead to, which was, Martin's deaths. But that became the spectacle. And also it became a spectacle, but it also became the heart, I suppose. And it was a way of getting, everybody there. A bit like the 35th, I suppose. Everyone was on the boat, wasn't they? You want there to be a community event at its heart, and that's why we played Billy and Honey's Wedding. But we did. We had more meetings than we ever did. Like I would we had, and I might have mentioned this earlier, you'd have long-term story conferences where you're looking ahead into the future and you're planning stories for 1 to 2 years, maybe even more in advance. You have short-term story conferences which each month, and you're looking at that document ahead, and you're kind of beating it out much more, and you know which the tent poles are. We introduced this kind of like long-term midterm. We introduced a midterm, and we had several midterms where we came up with the week and what the different components were going to be. And to kind of so I, yeah I remember like who done it. So the 30th was the reveal of who killed Lucy. Remember when the sixth episode went out that Christmas? I think some people thought, oh, this will be, 14 months later, the reveal,
Yeah,
the 40th.
that's what we thought.
But I know I didn't think it could be, because we'd already seen the action. The viewers had already seen the action take place on Christmas Day, so they knew what happened. So there was not necessarily anything else to find out what happened. So it wouldn't have been it would have been a reveal to maybe everybody else that found out, and maybe we wouldn't have, if we'd played it, we wouldn't have played, all of the other characters that we did play finding out. So we would have held all of that off, and it would have been a big reveal somehow. But what would the viewers have got? They wouldn't have got a reveal. They knew they were already in on the story. So that wasn't a possibility. And then we had conversations, well, could we do another whodunit? Because the viewers love a whodunit. There's been a whodunit. Who killed Archie? Who killed Lucy? But it just felt too close to the six, and it didn't feel the and we you know, Nish was around, but we also knew that we wanted Nish to go on New Year's Day. I don't know why. Well, I know, I do know why, but so we decided against a big whodunit reveal. And obviously we had the who attacked Cindy from Christmas, and that was just a, the 6 month build. Obviously we'd been going through, she had that Christmas Day episode where everyone found out about her and Junior. And I was really keen that that Christmas, after having the sixth Christmas, which was high concept, I wanted the Cindy Christmas to feel much more classic, feel more like a, this affair, this very domestic and all kind of set in the Vic and behind closed doors. It should felt like more of a classic Christmas. So that's why we attacked her, and we had that, but that wasn't the biggest story, if that makes sense. Maybe it was the biggest story we played through January, but it wasn't the climax of the 40th week, and we kind of knew it was never going to be. And then to answer your question about Martin, it's Martin Fowler, who was the first baby born on EastEnders, and so if you there's an explosion in the Vic, and someone, if not more, are going to die. And you have, again, it goes back to what I kind of said about with the Lola storyline. You have to do it about characters that you really, really care, are really going to miss, and are going to, like, I had someone randomly stop me in Nero the other day and ask, and they recognized me. And then they were like, oh, me and my mum, we watched the 40th. Oh my gosh, I was in tears. I was absolutely flooding in floods of tears as Martin passed away. And I've had that, I've had that quite often with, other colleagues and people that watch, even this person I didn't know. But that's what we were hoping for. That's what we wanted. We wanted people to be, the heart to go out for Martin because we've been on that journey with him for 40 years. So it was to some degree poetic, and I think if you look back at the story and how it built, in terms of the that we had the in the couple of weeks before, I think it was, or the week before maybe, the cat and mouse episode where we saw Paul and Arthur. So so
Was
that's
it
sorry.
deliberate having his 40th the year before? Did you
No,
know
what?
then?
It was a really weird one
Knowing the
because
mistake, yeah.
I did know then, but the writer who wrote that didn't. So it was a
Oh,
coincidence.
wow.
But I had it in for that reason.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, I know. Because
Yeah.
that, so looking back, it looked like it was very purposely done, and it kind of wasn't, but then I kind of was like, oh, this
Yeah.
works.
There
I
were a
mean, of
few
course.
people speculating towards the 40th that that's what it was going to be because they were going, oh, they celebrated his birthday last year, so it must be that. Everyone was still
And
trying to
it
find clues from the sixth
everyone
or
was, yeah,
something.
you trained us in the six to look at absolutely everything. So by the time that came around, we'd picked up on it, I think.
It also kind of goes back to what I was saying about Danielle and the Lola storyline, or Steve and Phil's storyline. And it's, I really wanted Martin and Stacey to be at the center of the four. And I knew, and I remember James, like we had lots of discussions, and he was like, I think he got, what did he say? He said, see, and we're doing this live, and he was like, and you trust me to do it? And I was like, yeah, you're phenomenal, and you will have been weeping, and he was brilliant, so I
He
couldn't ask
was.
for
I
more,
mean,
really.
the only thing I really kind of really wanted to ask as well about the 40th is obviously delighted for Lacey Turner to have had such a beautiful baby. Logistically, that must have given
Yeah,
you a few nights' sleep.
with that one, we did have a big backup plan.
Right.
Oh, that was tough. That was a real tough moment. I remember knowing what we had planned, but it was early-ish days, and Lacey coming to me and telling me that she was pregnant. And since that, she's told me that at that moment, apparently, I went white.
Bet you did.
And she was like, and at that point, she therefore knew that she played a really big role in it. But she said, "I want to be in it. I want to be a part of it. I'll do anything." But yeah, I, but we were we did have a backup plan. We did have a backup plan. We had a contingency that wouldn't have been as good. Wouldn't have been as good, but it would have went on air.
Yeah, sure. Would you react?
And we had to therefore shoot a different ending to that. So obviously we shot the beam, the girder falling on Martin with Stacey there at the in advance. Obviously the other side, that side of Christmas when we shot the Vic explosion, well before the live, obviously, and before we went into the rehearsal of the live. But because we had this other contingency, we had to shoot an alternative ending without Lacey and with someone else.
Yeah, I can imagine how scary that would have been.
I remember it was January, and we were getting a little nervous going, okay. And the team, the crew needed to, make, because there were some differences to the script and things that would have meant the crew would have had to rehearse differently, and it would have meant various different components being different. And then we were all getting a little bit nervous, and then I remember getting this text on a Monday morning, I think, from Lacey saying, she's here.
Thank
And
God.
you'll be back to work to rehearse. But I do, and I've said this to Lacey, I do now look back and go, wow. Like, and I knew it at the time, but what she did was phenomenal. Not
Oh,
many people
incredible. Yeah.
to
So
do
soon after
that.
giving birth as
Yeah.
well.
So she deserves her break.
So another part of the 40th was the big decision that you gave to the audience of picking between Denise and Ravi. And Denise and Jack. Did that go the way you were expecting? What were you hoping for from the audience with that?
I don't know. So that was an idea I'd had for like 3 years, I think, when I first started. I mentioned that I used to work on This Morning, and at one point I was the interactive producer, and we did a fully interactive episode where we got the audience to decide on every item. So it was like, do you want this item in fashion or this? So I kind of had this like idea, and I always felt that it would be just a real treat for the audience to make a decision. Like they've never been able to be a part of that before, and it's, you know, after all, it is their show. But obviously it comes with a lot of complexities. Your question was, did it go the way I wanted?
You voted for, see, a couple of times we'd seen your opinion, or rather what was presented as your opinion. In the lock-in party, when they did a vote around the pub as to who they think it should be, you held up a Ravi card. And
But that wasn't I only had the Ravi card. I came I so everyone was in situ. I was the last person to join the set, to join the record of it. Everyone was already in place. They'd left the seat for me, and there was a paddle on it. And I just had, and I picked it up, and it was the Ravi one. So it's, so
Oh.
that's how that, it wasn't that I was choosing Ravi. I didn't vote. I didn't vote. I was probably the only person at EastEnders that didn't, except Scott Dyer. They weren't allowed to vote. So who did I want? Do you know what? I think they probably did make the right decision. Yes, I think they, or the, I think the audience chose love, not lust. I think it may have been a different result if Priya wasn't in the picture,
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
which is
Yeah,
understandable.
definitely.
I always felt, and looking back, I am pleased that it was Jack actually, because I always felt that if you're choosing Jack, not only are you choosing love over lust, but you're also kind of choosing the end of this storyline that we've been playing for about 2 years. Whereas I felt that if you were choosing Ravi, you were coming still into this storyline and you wanted a lot more. I don't think there was this huge hunger or appetite to see what Denise and Jack were now doing behind closed doors. I think that was kind of a given. It was obvious they'll go back to kind of family life. And
Yeah.
whereas with Ravi, if the audience had chosen that Denise should have be with Ravi, you would have wanted to see that. You would have been hungry
Yeah.
to see
Yeah.
more of them. But because of the restrictions, and because it was live, and therefore you're not sh you don't like I remember the first thing that like Kiri and Ben, after coming off the live, they were like, now we know what we can do. Like, and it was their job to kind of pick that up. So they were in a state of limbo. Is that kind of right? Not really. They were in a state of uncertainty of what, how to play the future. So in hindsight, it was the best decision as well for the storyline.
That's fair enough.
We were
That's fair
team
enough.
Ravi, weren't we, Rob?
We were
We
100%
were
team
like,
Ravi.
we want all the drama.
Yeah, I mean, I get it completely, actually, and I think you're
Yeah.
right. I think the audience actually didn't really vote with Denise in mind whatsoever. I think they voted with
No.
Priya and Ravi in mind completely, because actually we very quickly loved Priya and still do. She's a great, great character played by a fabulous actress. So more Priya. Finally, and so I mean, the whole era was very much a success, and you know, multiple awards, ratings up, huge critical acclaim. Highlights and things you might have done differently.
It's a hard one. It's a really hard one. I'm incredibly proud of a lot of it. I'm incredibly proud of the six and the hype. I'm incredibly proud of Phil's storyline, as we touched on, and both those flashback episodes. I'm incredibly proud of the Lola storyline and the marathon episode with Jay and Honey, and how we kind of pulled that off. The 40th was kind of everything I could have wished for. I don't have any big regrets, and maybe that sounds a bit smug, but you know, I think in hindsight there's always certain storylines that didn't quite perhaps go according to plan, or didn't quite land as well as you'd hoped. And you know, I think, you know, even like Kiri, my story producer, and I kind of almost disagree on this a little bit, because while I think the six was phenomenal and got everything I spoke about earlier, kind of we you know, it got the audience guessing, and that 10-month period, it kind of it did everything that we wanted it to do. But There are certain things that didn't quite work out in the aftermath, is what I would say. And I don't mean kind of denouement of the storyline. And no, that was hard. And I still think people probably are unsure that what the denouement was, and that it fizzled out to some degree. And maybe it did. I mean, in my head, it was always that Halloween, and when Nish got taken down for it, and it ended for the women. And then obviously it really ended for the women when he then died at New Year. But I do appreciate that maybe that isn't quite where some of the viewers felt that it should have went, or went, or would have gone, or should have gone, or could have gone. I'm getting tongue-tied now. I think maybe they were looking for some sort of justice, for the women, or Linda. I never wanted that, because I never wanted to lose any of them, if I'm being really honest. It's a really difficult one. But there were other parts of the aftermath that I think didn't quite work as well as they could have done. I mean, yeah, that they yeah, and some things are out of your control, and that sounds like an excuse, but not huge regrets. No, huge regrets. And yeah, I'm on the whole, I'm very proud of what we achieved. Yeah.
Fair enough. And just finally, what's next for you?
So I started my new job literally the week after I left Elstree. So while I was so I left the week after the live, but as I think I might have said, I was going back once a week. I was still signing off episodes. I was still involved in every decision of every single one of my episodes, and then I was signing off things remotely, but then signing off episodes at Elstree. But I also started my new job, so I'm still at BBC Studios Drama Productions. So BBC Studios Drama Productions is also who produce EastEnders. We also produce Casualty. We also produce Silent Witness. We also produce the cozy crimes that come out of the Midlands, like Father Brown and Sister Boniface and Shakespeare and Hathaway. And I am developing my own slate of original dramas.
Fantastic. Well, Chris, we wish you
Wow.
all the very best of luck with them. I think it's fair to say you'll be a pretty big name in those dramas, we are sure. Thank you so much for your time today. It's
You're
been
welcome.
incredible.
I feel like I've waffled.
Not at all. It has been fascinating, and we could have done it for days. Chris Clenshaw, thank you very
Very.
much.
Oh, no, you're very, very welcome. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So, a huge thank you to Chris Clenshaw once again for speaking to us. Wasn't that good? I loved it. I loved talking to him so
Amazing.
much. What a fascinating man. He's so lovely as well,
Very.
wasn't he? He was so nice.
Lovely, humble,
Yeah.
and very passionate about
Oh,
EastEnders.
he
Like,
loves
that's
this
why
show,
he
doesn't he?
worked so well being an executive producer because of his genuine love for the show.
He absolutely loves it. He's obsessed with it. Like, it's brilliant. And my God, did that come across in his era. So once again, massive thank you to Chris Clenshaw. We will be back the usual podcast episode at the weekend. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do the following.
You can find us on Facebook at Albert Square After Dark, on Twitter and Instagram at E20 After Dark. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe. You can listen to us on Apple and wherever you find your podcasts. Drop us an email at e20afterdarkpodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to buy us a coffee, you can do so by going on buymeacoffee.com/E20After Dark.
Yes, you can indeed. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you very much for listening. And for Chris Clenshaw, thank you very much for speaking. It was brilliant. I loved it. I loved it.
Every minute.
Every second. We shall be back at the same time next week for our usual podcast episode. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
See you then. Goodbye.
Bye.